Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Everything that we've talked about so far today is pretty much non-political, right? If someone from the right and someone from the left were to tune into this stream, they would not really have a strong difference of like partisan opinion on what we've talked about, because this is something that affects all of us, regardless of your politics, your race, your gender, your identities, etc.
All right, guys, welcome to the show. I'm going to get right into it with this guest that we have on the show today. I'm very excited to have him on. I'm very excited to talk to him. I actually came across his content on TikTok, and he's speaking about many issues that I feel are very important and that I honestly, to be so real with you guys, have trouble digesting. And he manages to make it digestible and tell you why things are important. His name is Ian Carroll. He's an investigative journalist and social media commentator, and he covers a lot of stuff in his content. Recently, he's been talking about the P. Diddy lawsuit. He explains to you why your McDonald's ice cream machines are broken. He's getting into the mega corporations that run the world, like BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard. This guy has a lot of information for you, and he tells you exactly why you should care and what you can do about it. Ian Carroll, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Amal. I'm really excited. I'm glad that you have seen a large scope of what I do, because I love talking about all of it. So I'm stoked to go wherever this conversation leads.
That's awesome. Yeah. The first time I became aware of you was on TikTok, like I said, and I came across a video and you are going through the grocery store and explaining all the different items that are owned by BlackRock and State Street and Vanguard and blocking them out and letting people know what they should buy. And I thought, okay, this is super interesting. So I looked through your account and you were going all through how these mega corporations run the world, all the different attachments that they have, how they've sort of created this synergistic relationship with one another that keeps them in power. And that's really what I want to focus with you on today, because a lot of people, I think, understand that these massive corporations are running the world in some way, shape, or form, but they don't quite get how it breaks down, maybe why it's important, and what they can do about it. And before we really get into that, I do want the audience to know a little bit more about you. What is your background? How'd you get into this? And how'd you end up on my TikTok feed telling me what I should buy at the grocery store?
100%. I'm just a dude. I'm not an expert at anything. I'm not a financial advisor. I don't have any like big credentials. And that's kind of the point. When I started on TikTok only about a year ago, and I think I had great success partially on luck and partially on skill and strategy. And at first I was just looking into how finance works, because I wanted to know more. Like, I just felt like, if I can't explain this to someone in a conversation, do I really know what I'm talking about? Like, do I understand the world? And so I just started doing my research and basically sharing that with TikTok. And it was an immediate hit, because I started focusing on BlackRock, which is a wildly popular, everything from full on conspiracy theories straight down to just like actual real financial issues. And that investigation naturally branched from there into just about everything. And so I try really hard, and I always have, to just show my sources in my work. That's a big part of why I think my work speaks to people, because I'm not trying to claim my expertise is why you should listen to me, because it's not. I'm just trying to interpret the publicly available information the same as everyone else, and showing what I'm learning from, and hopefully inspiring other people to do their own research too. Because in 2024, we don't entirely need experts to tell us what's going on, especially when they're paid for by yours truly, BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard, whoever's funding them. So
yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think we start to convince ourselves of this sort of false appeal to authority that in order to be a journalist or to look into these issues, you have to have some sort of credentials and that you can't just find this information online and put two and two together, which you've managed to do in many of your videos. And they are wildly popular. I'm saying millions upon millions of views you're receiving by really compiling this information and giving it to people. At what point did you realize this is something that I need to start sharing? The stuff that I'm finding needs to be heard.
I mean, to be fair, I was sharing right from the start. My very first video went basically viral for the size of account, and I gained like 300,000 followers a month for the first several months on TikTok. So really, I mean, I had been sort of scheming on it and planning to do it. I was really inspired by, honestly, by the whole GameStop community, of the amount of research that they were doing into financial markets through the last couple of years that I was following that. And so for my very first video, is like the whole point of this, like, I'm going to start researching and I'm going to start sharing. And it just happened to hit really well. And I think for a while there, I was doing sort of like more general, like who owns the various industries in our world. And it was when I did my first, just kind of on like random inspiration, my first grocery store aisle that I did was the tampon aisle. And then I quickly branched out from there, and those blew my channel up. And it really informed me of like how useful that is to show people in the grocery store in an understandable and relatable way, these products that we're all buying right there on the shelf, color in all the different products that are actually just owned by the same companies, that are actually all just owned by the same corporations. That was sort of like the major growth factor in my channel, is these videos about grocery store aisles that you referenced.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of which one was the first one that I saw from you. I don't think
one. I was the shampoo guy for a long time.
Yeah, I saw 22 million views on that. You're the shampoo guy. You've got the hair. I know people are constantly asking you about the mustache and the hair. I think we'll get to that at some point in this interview. So yeah, so I check out these videos, and let's talk about the grocery store videos that you've done, and maybe we'll put some reference photos up for the audience, where you are going through the grocery store and finding all the different products that are owned by these mega corporations. A lot of people might not understand why that's at all important. So let's delve into sort of mega corporations 101. Why does it matter that these big names like BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard have ownership of these products?
Excellent starting point. We all sort of have this this internal understanding of the illusion of choice in the grocery store. Like, we all assume that there's a little bit of sort of corporate capture happening in our product lives, but not a lot of us have ever actually done the research or looked at the aisle in a way where you understand just how much of any given type of product is all tracing their money up to the same corporate ownership. And so the basic understanding that everyone should have is that you're buying a brand, like maybe you're buying Burt's Bees lip balm, but that brand is owned by a company, right? Almost all brands are owned by bigger companies, except for maybe small family founder owned brands, which is what I'm trying to promote and help us find more real small businesses. But Burt's Bees is actually owned by Clorox Corporation, the bleach company, which is also the same corporation that owns and makes Hidden Valley Ranch. And so a lot of people don't realize that products all over the grocery store you would never think are actually owned by whatever mega corporation. I kind of just use that term to refer to any publicly traded company that's just an enormous corporation that has a board of directors and a CEO that doesn't give a about you. And so Clorox Corporation, you could stop there, but all of those corporations, the megacorps, they're all publicly traded companies, meaning you can buy stock. And in theory, the idea of buying stock in a company is supposed to like democratize the ownership of companies. I mean, if you trace back the history of that, there's, you know, could be merit to the idea. But the problem is that it sort of is it's a form of democracy whereby your dollars buy your votes, so to speak. And so whoever owns the most shares of all these companies, and we all know this, but whoever owns the most shares gets the most votes in the corporate governance of that corporation. So Clorox's top shareholders are actually Vanguard, BlackRock, and State Street, and then a whole bunch of giant mega banks. And so all the corporations that make our food, that make our feminine hygiene products, our skincare, hair care product, all of our products are made by corporations that are owned by financial institutions, which are just like bigger corporations. And once you start to look around the grocery store and you trace that ownership all the way up to the top to those financial corporations, it's like 80 to 90% of every grocery store you walk into is actually, and it's not that like BlackRock doesn't literally own Burt's Bees. That's not what I'm trying to say. What I'm saying is that when you buy Burt's Bees, you're giving money to Clorox Corporation, and Clorox Corporation is using that money to pay their CEO like $50 million a year and to pay all their shareholders in stock buybacks. And that money eventually trickles up away from your community and away from the employees that, like, if you'd bought, you know, a small local brand of ChapStick, that money would stay in your community and would circulate. But as it is, it trickles all the way up to BlackRock or to Vanguard or to, you know, Bank of America, whoever owns all those shares. And we'll talk about this more later, I'm sure. But once you start looking at who owns all of those bigger financial institutions, well, BlackRock, their biggest shareholder is Vanguard. And it's the same in every direction. All those financial institutions just own each other. And so there's sort of this big, like, that's what I refer to as like mega corp, is just this like big mass of money at the top where it's hard to actually tell who owns everything because they all just own each other. And it's probably more of a power game than a actual money game. But going into the grocery store aisles and actually just taking photos and coloring out all the different products that are owned by these giant corporations really helped for me to learn what it means to be a sort of, not like responsible consumers, kind of a weird phrase. Like, it's not like I'm trying to like say anyone's bad for buying these products. I just want people to know that like that company doesn't care about you. And for example, the shampoo video that got 22 million views on TikTok that went so viral, it went viral because I accidentally discovered while I was going through Target's shampoo aisle that almost every single corporate brand of shampoo has faced tons of lawsuits for including product or for including chemicals that make your hair fall out. And it's just, you know, it's like fillers and chemicals and additives and solvents. And they've all faced these lawsuits, like their products are supposed to be good for your hair, but they're making your hair fall out. And then you just walk like 30 steps down the aisle and there's a whole section of hair growth products to fix the hair that fell out. And they're all owned by the same companies. And so you have one, the same company is selling you the shampoo and then selling you the product to put the hair back in your head. And none of it is like, it's not clear that it's all owned by the same people. And you have to hunt around. There was only two brands of shampoo in the entire aisle, like two tiny little sections that were actually family or founder owned brands at all. So it blew my mind, and clearly it blew TikTok's mind. And that's kind of where we started.
So they're selling you problems and they're selling you solutions, and it's all the same corporation that is managed by the same, you know, investment firm all together. And it's just this endless cycle. And you've really graphed this out. I could see a lot of people being like, you know, why do I care? I go to the grocery store, I buy my products, I have investments, and I'm actually invested through BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard, and it's bringing me money. I'm getting returns. Why should I change anything that I'm doing right now if, you know, I'm comfortable with the products that I have and my shampoo is not making my hair fall out?
Such a good question. And I think that a lot of people that there's a lot of people that are really conspiratorially minded that want everything to be a conspiracy. They want everything to be like black and white, and it's just not. And a lot, and BlackRock is a perfect example of a topic or a company that there's a lot that's bad about it, but it's not like the whole thing is some grand conspiracy. It's not like BlackRock like is secretly controlling the US government completely. Like, that's not what is going on here. And in this economy, most people can't afford to get rid of all of these mega corporate products because it's just cheaper by design to buy those products as opposed to family and founder owned brands. So first and foremost, my goal is just education, just so we know what the problem is, because, and we'll talk about the sort of more meta of why the problem is overarching and grand. But at the ground level, it's just education. Like, you should just know. And in some cases, it's like, you might not be able to change your spending habits about like every product in your life, but some things that you only buy a few times, you know, once a month or so, like shampoo or like laundry detergent, things that are naturally chemicals in general, you could maybe make a huge difference in your life by changing the chemicals in your life that you don't have to buy super frequently to, you know, like change your feminine care products to a female owned company where that woman actually cares about your female health and isn't putting in products that destroy your reproductive system into the products that you're putting in your reproductive system is like an obvious example. But the more meta reason why it matters is a lot of people, when they look at the market, they think it's all about money. And this is the, like, the debunk that all the like financial experts are always in my comments doing, is like, you own BlackRock shares with your retirement account. Like BlackRock makes you money too. It's like not a big deal. Like it's not like they're making all the money from it. And it's not actually about money. It's about culture, because every share of a company represents a vote in the company. And so if BlackRock owns 20% of X company, they have 20% of the voting power. And that might sound like that's a lot less than 50% of the voting power, but like you can, the most powerful people in a company often only have 6 to 10%. Like you can totally take over a company by just buying about 10% of the company, because the shares are spread out across, you know, thousands and thousands of investors. And there's only a few big players that have more than 5 or 10% of any of these companies. And so when you go across all the corporations, the top 500 or 100 biggest corporations in the world, in America, almost all of them, the top investors are BlackRock and Vanguard. Usually State Street is the third. And between the three of them, they own like 40 to 50% of the entire stock market in terms of value. And that's a huge amount of voting power. And that matters, because the voting power in these companies is what determines who elects their board of directors, who elects their CEOs, who elects their executives that are making all the decisions. And those decisions are things like, do we go with this cheaper chemical that's really bad for everyone, but we don't really care because we're going to make a lot of money? Or do we go with this like more humanistic approach and care about our consumers? And so the culture that is poisoning us from the top down, the culture that is putting really low quality ingredients into our food, putting chemicals with no regulation into our, like the culture of everything corrupt that stems from corporate profits in America is perpetuated by the people that are elected to lead all of the corporations in America. And the people that are elected to lead all of those corporations are elected by the shares that we're talking about right now. And so when we are ambivalent to, or just like don't care about this system by which these few extremely wealthy bankers control the voting power in all the corporations that feed our lives, all the products we use, we wind up with an incredibly corrupt system. That's like the more meta reason why this education matters.
Yeah. And I feel like people can feel this. I mean, you can see where products have really declined in quality. A lot of people say, you know, my appliances used to last for decades. Now it lasts a couple of years, and then we got to update this and upgrade that. And a lot of that feeds into what you're saying. And on this show, we cover a lot of the political statements that certain companies and corporations make. And we talk about ESG, environmental, social governance, and that seems to play a big role in what's happening here. So when you see companies like Coca-Cola start teaching their employees, hey, we need to work on being less white, or you see some of these anti-racism trainings that start happening at American Express, how is it that these names, BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard, are sort of playing a role? We've heard on this show, we played a clip of Larry Fink, who is kind of the face of BlackRock. And he says, you know, with the power that we have at BlackRock, we can influence these companies, not only to shift and change their products to really help us gain profit in our investment, but we can also tell these companies what to tell the public and what stance to take. And he sort of alludes to the fact that BlackRock forces these companies to engage in these political agendas. Can you tell me more about that?
Absolutely. I think you're referring to the famous clip where he uses the quote, force behaviors. It went very viral for, and it's a little clipped out of context, right? Like he's not literally saying like, let's force the world to do what we want, but like he is saying that from the top, as investment managers, as the biggest shareholders, as the representatives on the boards of directors, we can strongly influence companies to go more ESG, to go more racial equity inclusions. And I think that people want it to be, again, black and white. They want Larry Fink to be this evil conspiratorial bad guy. And like, yeah, he's got lots of horrible qualities. I'm sure he's got lots of somewhat secret agendas and deals with people high up. But I also don't think he's like an eternal boogeyman where everything he does is necessarily for evil reasons. I think that when you look into his history and his sort of life story, it's clear that he sees himself as a like a singular human, a unique force in the markets, and he wants to leave a mark on the markets. It's clear that he's more motivated by his legacy than he is by his personal wealth and his money. And most of his moves throughout his career are more aligned with building his legacy and maybe his power rather than building his actual bank account. And I think that it kind of comes down to your personal take on ESG and your personal take on like corporate governance and racial equity as to whether you think it's good or not, because BlackRock was especially a huge proponent and one of the major factors that pushed ESG especially into the markets. And he was very open about that. Like, Larry Fink writes an open letter to investors every year. It's like kind of a famous letter in the investing world, in which he lays out his prognosis of how the markets are looking and especially how BlackRock is intending to interface with the markets over the coming year. And for several years there, he was very much like, ESG is the future. ESG is the way. Everyone do ESG. And obviously, when, you know, the biggest capital manager in the market is telling everyone ESG is how you're going to get your money, everyone's going to go ESG. But then when the public all started to push back against that and started to sort of have public outrage over ESG, Larry Fink recoiled in a big way. And the words ESG was completely gone from his letter the next year. And suddenly they sunk back into the background, which I think tells us two things. One is that his spine is not as stiff as he likes to present it as. Is like, you know, he's kind of following the trends too. That's how you make money in the markets. And two, it's like, we have power as the public to influence policy, even from the highest levels, because if we all speak out against something, they can feel the pressure, because like, look at what happened to all the various companies that have faced serious boycotting movements over the last couple of years. There's kind of various examples from like left and right politics. There's examples from sort of like just basic corporate governance. You can look at Boeing right now. It's like when we, the people, collectively decide that we want to stand up against something that's being pushed down from above at us, we do have power to, at the very least, make the birds at the top change their tune. And the ESG narrative is a great example of one that, like, sure, it still is being pushed in a big way, but it's way more subtle all of a sudden, because we were all speaking out against it. So many people were outraged. And there's a strong argument to be made against ESG from just like a purely capitalism standpoint too. It's like money talks to these people, and it's not necessarily financially sound to tell ExxonMobil to go all ESG. That right. being said, we should probably be telling ExxonMobil to do a lot of things differently, but
yeah, surely. Yeah, 100%. And then you see these things and you think, okay, the money that you could be spending on, you know, making these products better for us and, you know, less of a health risk for us, it's going towards other endeavors. And then you sort of track it back to these Black Rocks and State Streets and Vanguards. But I like that you say, you know, there is something that you can do about it. Your voice really does matter. Your dollar does matter. And we are making changes and shifting things as we vocalize these issues that we are recognizing. Because I think in a lot of ways, people can sort of see the man behind the curtain on these issues, understand the problem, but the problem looks so big that it's almost insurmountable. Like, what am I going to do? You know, everything in my studio right now is probably in some way, shape, or form owned by these massive corporations. And then, you know, we trace that back to the Black Rocks and the State Streets and the Vanguards. And it feels like I'm a powerless little ant in the colony that can't do anything to sort of overthrow the queen. So what does the average person do in their daily lives in vocalizing and talking about these issues? What actions can they take that will shift the relationship between these major players and regular people?
I love that question. A lot of people hate my answer to it, but I love that question because this is sort of, it's right to the heart of why I do what I do. Yeah. And everyone wants a simple answer to it. Everyone wants like, guys, I just found the solution. And, you know, sometimes I use that as a hook. I'm guilty of using that as a hook in my videos to get people to come in and watch.
Hey, it works.
But really, the solution is education. The meta solution is that this is a cultural issue. Our culture has been corrupted by unchecked capitalism, by unregulated capitalism, by the capitalists that are the most successful getting a chance to write the regulation that regulates the next generation of capitalism. And in a cycle over the last, you know, 80 years, 60 years, they have regulated themselves into a position of way too much power with way too little oversight. And capitalism was never supposed to exist without proper oversight, despite what they may say today. So this cultural problem of us all sort of going along with it, with us not understanding how it works, that's the biggest one. That's a problem of education. And there's a reason why we aren't taught finance in school. There's a reason why we aren't taught about stocks in school, why we aren't taught about corporate governance, et cetera, in school. It's because if we all understood corporate governance, we would realize that us as shareholders, we have the power to vote. You can request the voting rights to your shares that are held in BlackRock. Just most people don't, because it's a lot of work to vote in a bunch of corporate elections that you have to do the research about what's actually being voted on. But like, for example, General Mills, I think last year, maybe the year before, they had votes about like, should we get rid of a bunch of plastic packaging in our product, in our chain of product? And it's like, they didn't, a lot of them didn't vote for that because they also sit on the boards of plastic companies and have deals with people in the plastic industry. But regular people, it's pretty obvious that like, we'd be like, cool, yeah, we don't need all that trash in our world. There's always these kinds of votes that if more of us were engaged, it's pretty obvious how we could change these companies in the bigger picture. So education is sort of like the bigger answer. And that's the whole point of my channel is I want to understand this more. And I think all of us should understand this more. And the schools are not going to teach it to us. So it's up to us to teach ourselves. And it's not hieroglyphics. It's not impossible to understand. And you don't need to become like some day trader savant at the markets to just understand the basics of like how shares equal votes, how you can research the companies you're interested in, et cetera, et cetera. So education is the basic and the first step. There is an important, like it's important to also talk about regulation and getting involved in the legal process because there are good people in Congress, at least partially good people in Congress in the Senate. And there are bills that have come up over the last couple of years that make big inroads in this. One of them is called the Index Act. It's currently just dead in the water in Congress somewhere, never been voted on. It got brought to the floor. And of course they were like, eh, cool. Let's just like forget about it. But it's an act that's pretty simple to read. Anyone can look up the Index Act. And it basically addresses how BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street have a ton of voting power because they hold all of our retirement account shares. It's like one of the biggest, it's like a multi-trillion dollar base of capital is all of our American retirement accounts, and they hold the shares for them. And we all own the shares technically, but in the fine print, they control the voting rights for most of those shares. So that it's set up in a way that we're handing over the governance of the corporate market for all American retirement accounts. And the Index Act is a piece of legislation that more or less says, all of you asset managers, you BlackRocks and Vanguards and State Streets, you're not allowed to vote those shares in your own way unless you're explicitly told by the shareholder on the other end of that share, by regular people like me, how they want those shares voted, or else you have to vote those shares the way that the majority of your normal human investors voted. You can't like take all the extra shares and vote for the big oil bill when most of your shareholders actually wanted to vote against it. So it's like, it's a great piece of legislation that takes one small step towards taking away this massive voting power base that these asset managers have accrued, which lends a lot of credibility to, like a lot of people in my comments for a long time until I explain this more, were always caught up on the money, thinking that it was all about the money. Like you can buy shares of BlackRock too, and you can make, it's not about the money. And the bill, the Index Act, makes it really clear that like smart people in Congress understand this too, that it's about the voting rights that govern our lives through corporate influence.
Okay. Yeah. So that would make a huge, huge difference what you're talking about right now, but hasn't really gone through or really seen the light of day, which is really interesting. I know a lot of people, and you sort of touched on this when talking about the fact that there are good politicians who are in power right now who can sort of move the dial on this. A lot of people view this issue as it's the corporations who are working with these huge investment firms who are also in cahoots with our politicians, and they're sort of all just working together to line their own pockets. And that's how our politicians are getting into power in jobs that don't pay anywhere near $1 million, but they're leaving millionaires. But you seem to think that there are good politicians who are active and who share our interests. Let's get into that. Let's talk about it.
Totally. There are a few. I don't want to act like I think politicians are good guys. I do a lot of research into lobbying, and there's a whole genre of lobbying groups and think tanks that are basically corporate corporate CEO, corporate interest groups that specifically are organized and designed just to lobby our politicians on behalf of corporations. And when you go to their Wikipedia pages, it gets framed as though they're like looking out for businesses and they're like looking out for us. And that's total bullshit. Like, there are massive financial pressures directly applied to our political spaces in every way possible. There's one for almost every industry. There's one for the pharma industry. There's one for real estate. And it's worth, everyone that has a little extra time, it's worth going down those rabbit holes and just learning about groups like the Business Roundtable, et cetera. A lot of the board members of these big corporations sit on those groups as well. So not a specific example here, but it's not uncommon to be looking at the board of directors of like a big pharma company and find out that they're also on the pharmaceutical lobbyist roundtable group that lobbies Congress. And there's also the revolving door factor of a lot of politicians that sit on these committees in government to regulate pharma or regulate agriculture, leave office and immediately go and get a, you know, a cushy board seat on Pfizer or on Abbott Laboratories or whatever it is. And so absolutely not all, most politicians are wildly corrupt. And that's a tragedy of, you know, sort of the human condition. But there are people that, you know, there are people that are good, a few in politics, and it's important for us to support them, to recognize them and to support them. And I think the more important factor is that it's important to realize that politicians are playing a game, and there are rules to that game. And what their, if their goal is to climb that ladder, we play a role in them climbing that ladder and them appeasing us, giving us we can game that system as well. And so you can see how a lot of them like play the outrage game or play the clickbait game, or like will offer like sort of like a half-hearted idea that they'll get a lot of like support from the public for, even though it's not actually going to do anything. But we can jump into those various opportunities and be like, oh, you want support from the public and you offered us this deal you didn't think would go anywhere? Well, we're about to demand that it goes somewhere because you're beholden to us. And it's, you know, we don't have as much power as we should, but there are lots of opportunities for us to game the system back at them, for us to vote them out, for us to research who they're being lobbied by. It just requires education. It requires us to be more involved. And we're also distracted listening to rap that is being produced by P. Diddy and these various other distractions that too many people don't pay attention to what's actually important. So a lot of my other content also focuses on like the distractions and who's making them all and why they're all here. Because I feel very confident that the people that hold all the power in our world today know very well that if the people that don't hold the power knew how the power works, we would all have a lot more power. So it all comes back to education.
Yeah, it's very true. I feel like a lot of this is just covered in, you know, fancy words and distractions and all of these things. And when you're living your daily life, I mean, you have so many other priorities where educating on these topics sort of falls down to, you know, the wayside. And I think they are reliant on that being the case for a lot of people. And it requires time. I'm sure what you do looking into these issues takes a lot of time. Every time I watch a video of yours, I'm like, how did this man just research all this? How much time, just as a tangent, does it take you to go down these rabbit holes and give this information to people?
So obviously it's different for everyone, but it's a lot of time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's my full-time job and it's really a passion. I realized before I started on social media that I think a lot of social media people don't realize that if you're going to get into a niche, that means you have to do it all day, every day. Like, you better love what you're getting into and producing, because if you burn out on it, your content is done. And the one thing I'll never get tired of is researching and learning, and especially learning about mysteries and conspiracy theories and like all the like one thing I will never run out of content to make is content about corruption, because there will always be more corruption. And so some digs take, you know, like some are quick because I already have some background information, so I kind of know what I'm looking for. Sometimes I can throw a video together in like an hour or less. But a lot of them are more like days and weeks of kind of cumulative understanding and putting things together. It really depends on the size of what I'm doing.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. I feel like in a lot of ways, our system of learning is really flawed and corrupt. And I've seen you talk about that a lot on TikTok, where I think you spoke about a story where they were offering to pay children to go to school. And this was money that they were going to give, you said, not just high schoolers, but like students in middle school and elementary. They were going to pay them to go to school in kindergarten. That's insane. Yeah. And then you get there and the system of learning that's really being set up for your mind is not one that's conducive to creativity. It's not one that's conducive to really uncovering some of these more important issues. What is your stance on education? Because I know you said you were a teacher. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a great question. I skimmed over this when you asked me about my background, but I was a teacher. Mm-hmm. I'm raised by two teacher educators. So like my daycare growing up was going to like college seminars and sitting in the back of the class, like teacher ed seminars. And so I started teaching at age 14 in various, like, I don't have a teaching degree or anything. I just am good at it and started early and kind of like got just kind of jumped from here to there based upon parents telling other people that I was good at my job. And so me always bringing this back to education and all the content I make, the whole point of my platform is 100% rooted in a belief based on a lot of experience that I'm not trying to say that the education system was set up by like the Illuminati to make everyone dumb slaves, but like, it's just not that simple. But the education system was made to build workers for factories. And then after it was initially set up to make us all good workers in factories, it evolved over time via the influences that the people with the most power exerted on it. And, you know, maybe some of them had real education in mind, but a lot of them had other interests in mind. And the people that are influencing educational policy from the top, the people that are funding education, especially higher education, usually they're people that stand to gain from whatever they're funding. For example, pharmaceutical companies funding all of the biggest health, higher education, health academies and stuff like that. So everything from higher education all the way down to kindergarten was not designed with us in mind. And all the teachers that are working in these places, most of them have great hearts and want to do well. But I've seen firsthand how working even within the most like free and progressive and inspiring schools, they're still working within a system that works against them in many ways. I think we all can't help but notice that inevitably, school actually kills most people's desire to learn. School beats that out of you very early. And you could say it's by design, you could say it's by accident, but whatever the reason, kids naturally want to learn. There's nothing more powerful in like the young human psyche than curiosity. And it's very easy to foster curiosity as an adult, as a mentor and a teacher, if you're in a system that will allow you to foster it. But the education system beats it out of you. And so a lot of what I'm doing here is like, I was gifted and blessed enough to not have that beaten out of me because I was raised by teachers and had the fortune to go to good schools where I was nurtured to be curious and to practice the scientific method of question, hypothesis, research, conclusion, et cetera. And so a lot of what I'm doing is actually just trying to lead by example of just showing what it means to get curious about a question and then to do research about it and then to think about it and be like, okay, now what don't I understand? Now what's my next question? And for most people that don't have time to do all the research I do, at least I can provide like a fun and digestible, fast-paced sort of like virtual experience of doing that with me.
Yeah, that's awesome. It seems like in every topic that we can even think of, when we're talking about corporations, when we're talking about pharmaceuticals, when we're talking about food or school, all roads lead back to corruption. So you found yourself a very good niche because, like you said, you are never going to run out of things to talk about. And it seems no matter the industry or the facet of society that we're talking about, people like to obtain some sort of power. And then that power ultimately corrupts in some way, shape, or form of people maybe serving their own self-interest or just no longer caring about the goal that that industry was created for. And it can be a sad, sort of cynical, pessimistic reality once you realize it, but you remain extremely optimistic. And when you're covering these stories, you're covering stuff when I'm hearing it, I'm like, this is heinous information, but you are so excited to share it with people. And you have this energy about you that, you know, I can always learn more and I'm going to bring it to you. Do you remain an optimist with the things that you're uncovering, or is there just energy behind what you do?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think a lot of it just has to do with my point in life at this point. I'm 31 right now, and I definitely was as a mid-20s dude, I was definitely more depressive about the world. I was definitely way more pessimistic, way more nihilistic. And I think at some point it just gave way to realizing that I'm in charge of my outlook on life and I'm in charge of contributing something to the world. And I mean, I have the blessing of being able to contribute something to the world, and this platform allows me to contribute. And there's nothing that feels better inside your soul than contributing to your community and contributing to something bigger. So that helps a lot. That helps keep me going. And I think the other half of it, other than like it being meaningful, is just that humor is the best offense against depression and against nihilism and against the vast evil in our world. It's honestly hilarious how totally destroyed our world, like how horrible most of this is. So I just make a habit of laughing at it all and laughing at how ridiculous the position we're in is. But when you zoom out, when you step back and look at the bigger picture, and when I research more history, it's not like corruption is new. It's not like we're living in like necessarily the most evil time ever. History goes in cycles. Corruption goes in cycles. And so I think that the zoom out helps to give me hope and perspective that things will always come back around. We're not at the end of the world. Like, things will change. And I'm excited to see how they change, because you know there will be some ways that things will change for worse and some ways that things will change for better. And we'll all be a part of that change. And I'm excited to be as much of a part as I can be to hopefully push for changes that end up with a better world for my kids to go to schools, hopefully in 20 years, than I got to go to.
Yeah, 100%. We want to leave the world a better place. And that does involve change and progress. And some people will package things that aren't necessarily progressive as progress. But we talk about that a lot on this show. But yeah, let's talk about being a force for change. I kind of love to end these interviews where we're talking about really big issues with solutions. We've already covered some of them. If you're going to change one thing, start educating yourself if you haven't started already. Support local businesses, which I believe you have a list on the internet, right, of businesses people mm-hmm. can support.
I have a bunch of spreadsheets on my website, and they're just Google Drive spreadsheets, just of compilations of all of the companies that I've looked into. So if you want to buy cereal, or you want to buy snacks, or you want to buy soda, whatever, I have lists for all these different categories of products, personal care products, et cetera, that I go through all the main companies that you'll find, like all the mega corporate brands. And then I list out who owns them, whether they're a corporation or whether they're a family or founder owned business, as well as any notes I came across. So it's like a very basic and accessible way for people to just pull that up in the grocery store. Or if they want to change a specific product, they can go and look for other options. I am working behind the scenes right now with a very exciting group of people that hopefully we're going to turn that idea into something much bigger, hopefully an app and things like that, where we can take a sort of hard to access version of it right now and turn it into an extremely accessible, much more profound version of it in the future. Hopefully more to come on soon.
That's amazing. Because I know there's awesome. Yeah. Because I know there's apps where you can sort of scan products and it will tell you how healthy they believe the product is for you. I would love if I could scan a product and it would just say BlackRock. And I can put it right back. So on top of that, I'm hearing from you that people need to realize where their power lies. And that includes knowing how important your dollar is and how you use it, investigating your relationship with BlackRock and Vanguard and State Street, and taking back ownership of your vote and your power to say something and actually affect change here. Is there anything else that people can take away from you right now of, you know, action items that they can start implementing in their daily lives?
100%. This is the most important by far in my mind of everything. And it's not really what we've talked about overtly, but it's the basis of everything right now. And it's the basis of everything I make on my channel. Is everything that we've talked about so far today is pretty much non-political, right? If someone from the right and someone from the left were to tune into this stream, they would not really have a strong difference of like partisan opinion on what we've talked about, because this is something that affects all of us, regardless of your politics, your race, your gender, your identities, etc. I make a really big point. Well, I try to stay tuned into a point of keeping as focused as I can on these issues that unite us, because the issues that unite us, like our health, like our money, like the economy, like our education, those things transcend this weird divide of lefts and rights, this like partisan hatred and the culture war that is really stoked by the mainstream media to keep us fighting each other. And throughout the last several decades, every time that a central anti-corporate, anti-Wall Street, anti-big money movement has arisen, like Occupy Wall Street, for example, it has been met by strong suppression and then the stoking of more divisive hatred. And there's nothing more counterproductive for all of our lives than playing into that hatred amongst each other, right? Because we all have so much more in common with each other. Even like the most far right and the most far left people, they live way more similar lives than either of them do to Larry Fink or to, you know, the board members of Bank of America. And it's so like, yeah, we all have our differences and we all have our differences of opinion, and we should discuss that, but we shouldn't hate each other over it. Like, we shouldn't You shouldn't stop talking to your family members because they have different political beliefs than you, because we are all one big people. And the hatred and division that's stoked amongst us that forces us all apart, it only fractures our power as a community to hold the powerful to account. And it only fractures our ability to have conversations and get smarter and ask questions and learn together as a community. So we didn't really talk about that today, but I think that's the underlying most important thing, because if you're putting a political lens over everything, if you're putting like a, oh, are they on the right side of this? Otherwise, I'm not going to listen to them lens over everything you learn and listen to, you're inevitably filtering facts and information out of your life that you could be learning from. And you're pushing people away from you that are great people on both sides that you could have a lot more in common with than you realize. So I think
100%.
Education and compassion. Sounds corny.
Love that. Love it. No, that's not corny at all. I talk about that a lot on this channel, because, you know, I had a journey from being like a really radical leftist to where I am now, which is sort of center right. And in that, there are so many through lines and connections between the two different sides that we are unwilling to acknowledge because of, you know, things in the culture war that I definitely care about. But there's so much that if we did band together and agree that, you know, outside of these other issues, we can really find congruence here, there would be so much change to be made. And we're in an unfortunate sort of inflection point where there's a ton of people who want to like fan the flames and not many who want to connect people together. So I love that you put that in this video, because it's a very needed point that I think so many should hear. Now, we're out of time with you, Ian, but I'm going to have to bring you back because there's so many other things to unpack that I think people on this channel need to hear. I want to close out this interview with some rapid fire questions, and let's see what your answers are to this. What's your favorite conspiracy theory?
Ooh, my favorite conspiracy theory is probably ancient Egyptian conspiracy theories, like ancient culture conspiracy, like my most fun one to just like ponder.
Okay, super cool. Who's another creator that people should watch?
James Lee. He's a Breaking Points contributor. You can find him on TikTok, James Lee, L-I.
Okay, love it. Love it. What shampoo do you use?
I use Gallagher's shampoo. They're on TikTok. Support them on TikTok shop. Gallagher's is a small family-owned company that, yeah. They're great.
Love it. Okay. F, Mary, Kill, BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street.
Ooh, cool question. I'd marry BlackRock because Larry Fink would be great with my finances. I'd probably F State Street because State Street feels kind of wild. I mean, State Street is owned by BlackRock, so clearly they're down for whatever. And okay. I would kill Vanguard because Vanguard feels really shady and I don't know what's going on with them.
Okay, fair enough. Who's a celebrity or politician that people should look a little closer at?
Jay-Z. I think we're going to be looking at Jay-Z a lot in the next year.
I totally agree. As soon as the P. Diddy stuff came out on the show, I'm like, okay, we need to start side-eyeing Jay-Z.
Jay-Z's hiding real hard right now.
Yes, he is. Okay. And last one, Ian, if you could snap your fingers and have one brand disappear from the shelves, what would it be?
Man, all of them isn't a fair answer. It would be Unilever. Unilever's got their hands in way too many pies.
Yeah. I think most of the grocery store would be empty if we just snapped our fingers and got rid of
Unilever.
Those
are good questions. That was fun.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I had to put it together some unique ones. I knew a lot of people want to know more about your hair and mustache. I decided to stay away from that. But, you know, if you want to, you know, what's your hair care routine?
A lot less than people think. It's get it wet and then put a hat on. That was my hair care routine this morning. I wash it maybe once or twice a week at the most. Yeah, there's really no secret
genetics,
to it,
guys,
other than have the right parents. Yeah, and go. Don't put a bunch of trash chemicals in it every day. Eat healthy, and get a lot of sunlight, exercise.
There we go. And everybody's hopefully going to be working on that after this interview. Ian, thank you so much for being on the show and spending time with me today. How can people find you and follow you?
All of my links are on my website, cancelthisclothingcompany.com. And there's a connect page where you can find all the different links, all of my different socials. I'm biggest on TikTok and Twitter. cancel this clothing company on TikTok, cancel Cloco on Twitter. My name is Ian Carroll on Twitter. I would love it if people would follow my new YouTube channel that I'm getting way more involved with now that I've upgraded all my tech. That's Cancel This Conspiracy. All the long form platforms, I've changed my branding a little to Cancel This Conspiracy. And between all of those links, I'm sure you'll find me everywhere that I am. I talk about a lot of stuff that inherently gets censored, stuff we're not supposed to talk about, like the CIA, for example. So I tend to put different types of content different places. Like, you won't find a lot of my spicy stuff on TikTok. You will find it on Twitter. So,
okay, love to hear it. And we'll link that down below if you guys want to check him out. Most definitely give Ian a follow if you aren't already. He's blowing up and sharing some amazing information. Ian, thank you so much for doing what you do. I have no doubt you're going to continue, so I don't even need to tell you to continue putting up the good fight and just keep educating people. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Amal. It's been a pleasure. Great interview.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, you better. Yeah, you better.